I was sent a very interesting short animated video the other day, and it's a training aid for teachers, and it comes from the teachers' union. So, as a father of five children, and as a manager of people for a couple of decades, I have some thoughts on this kind of thing. But anyway, we'll play it, and I'll stop now and then to give my input.
At a parent-teacher meeting, a mother told me that her child, who we called Lucy, identified as a boy and wished to be called Liam. After this, I set about preparing the class for Liam's social transition.
To be honest, the first thing that strikes me is the unsettling kind of optics of this cartoon, especially the eyes. Kind of reminds me of that film Coraline.
I taught lessons investigating and challenging gender stereotypes, and using the book Introducing Teddy, explained that some people don't identify with the gender they're assigned at birth.
That is true. Some people don't identify with the gender they were assigned at birth, i.e., their biological, actual gender. I believe it's called gender dysphoria, and as far as I'm aware, it's an extremely rare phenomenon or condition. But, you know, maybe I'll get hold of the Teddy book and educate myself further.
I said, Tilly wasn't happy because everyone saw her as a boy, but she knew she was really a girl.
She knew she was really a girl. These are very young kids being portrayed in this video, so knowing you're a girl when you're biologically a male, that's pretty strong stuff to come from a teacher to a class of very young children. Shouldn't they really bring in, you know, professionals for this kind of advanced psychological intervention?
My pupil Ray asked, so boys can change into girls? And then Julie chimed in, and girls can change into boys. Yes, I said.
Yes, a teacher with no training in these matters said to kids who were asking that question, how can a teacher say that to very young kids when biologically the situation is quite clear and quite complex in its psychological sides? This is very interesting.
Sometimes, while the doctor says a baby is a boy, as that baby grows up, they feel inside that they're not a boy.
Yes, this happens, and it has always happened, for sure. But either it's a phase, or it would come under the category, I guess, of gender dysphoria, which would require a longer conversation with professionals.
While they might have a boy's name, like Tilly, they know they aren't a boy.
Again, there's that phrase, no. That a very young child would know that they are not a boy. Even if that is the biological reality, they know otherwise. So this strikes me very much as the kind of thing we would do in management, where we were kind of manipulating people and using certain phraseology to push a certain idea or concept onto someone. But of course, we were dealing with adults, not with young kids.
And want to change their name. The same can happen for a girl. By making those changes, the person feels happier and more like themselves.
I'm delighted with the happiness, but the really big thing that changed was a teacher with no credentials, apparently in biology or reality, made a statement multiple times to a class of kids saying that people knew they were not and that they can actually change fundamental scientific realities. So that's a big change.
Some people who experience this might use the word transgender to describe themselves. Once the pupils understood the concept, and once Liam and his mom were happy, I helped him tell the class. Everyone, do you remember last week we read about Tilly? Everyone replied, yes. Well, we're very lucky to know a person like that, and they're even in our class. The person we've been calling Lucy is really a boy.
Is really a boy. Again, this teacher tells a bunch of young children an apparent fact that this biological girl is really a boy. Do you think the teacher is massively going beyond his remit?
And is now ready to tell us all. Liam told the class. I've always felt like a boy.
Well, at least the kid is honest. I've always felt like a boy. Much more honest than the teacher.
My new name is Liam.
Fair play to you, Liam. Good name.
So when I call the roller, I'll be calling out Liam McCarthy. And we will all call him Liam, won't we? The whole class agreed. Yes, teacher.
Well, they're hardly going to cause some trouble with this particular topic these days, right?
Then Paul asked, teacher, is Liam still sitting at our table?
Well, Paul, given it's a mixed class, that wasn't a very smart question, was it?
I laughed and replied, yes, nothing has changed except Liam's name. And nothing did change, except that Liam seemed much happier in school. A few weeks later, I introduced the pupils to non-binary identity.
You did you? And how is this in your remit? These are young kids in this cartoon, far as I can tell.
Where people don't identify with being either a boy or a girl. The most important element of any lesson on gender identity is that we put the emphasis on respecting everyone, regardless of gender identity or expression.
I absolutely concur. We always respect people, regardless of their condition, their perception, how they see themselves, how they want to live in the world, within the law. But the rest of that video, there's something very, very unsettling about it. So what the hell exactly is going on? Well, it wouldn't be me if I didn't give you some helpful answers or input as to the challenge we are now facing on this front. And here is an interview from Sky News Australia mainstream with Matt Walsh, I think, who made a movie. And it helps to explain not only the problem we're facing, but also the origins and where this challenge is coming from. And it's not really coming from grassroots or minorities or anything like that. It's very much coming from above and from institutions, academia, and from a few decades of build-up, leading us to a very, very weird place. So here you go.
And now something I've been waiting weeks to bring you. It's the extraordinary Matt Walsh, the man behind the groundbreaking documentary, What is a Woman?
What is a woman? Can you tell me that? Well, you're at the Women's March. You must have some idea.
Please, if one person could tell me what a woman is.
You are not here for women. We ask you to leave.
What is that?
A woman is not anything in particular.
There is not one particular thing.
It could be many things to many people.
Some women have penises, right? Some men have vaginas.
I like scented candles. And I've watched Sex and the City.
Yeah.
How do I know if I'm a woman?
That's a great question.
You're not a scientist. You're not a gender studies major.
No.
How do you know that you're a man?
I guess because I got a dick.
Can a man become a woman?
I'm not a woman, so I can't really answer that.
Women only know what women are.
Are you a cat?
No.
Can you tell me what a cat is? You want to tell us what a woman is?
This 95-minute documentary is from author, speaker and podcast host Matt Walsh. He also has a book by the same name, and he travelled across America and other parts of the world seeking to answer that key question. I began by asking Matt why he made this documentary in the first place.
Well, it starts with just recognizing that gender ideology is this pervasive, toxic influence in our culture and across the world, across the Western world anyway. And also realizing that, you know, in spite of the fact that it's been so successful in claiming so many people's minds, it is really quite hollow at its core. And it seemed to me, you know, going back years, that just a couple of questions really bring down the whole house of cards, starting with the question, which is in the title of the movie, of course. What is a woman? If you can't define what the word woman is, then nothing that the gender ideologues say makes any sense. None of the claims that they make any sense if they can't define the term. And as we discovered filming the documentary, they certainly cannot define the term.
No, they can't. Even women at the Women's March were completely baffled by that question and didn't feel confident committing an answer. Now, there is a hero that emerges in this documentary. You've said that Scott Nugent is the hero of the film. Let's hear what they have to say.
We have 5 children's hospitals in the United States promoting that.
And what?
That's a phalloplasty. That's a bottom surgery. We have 5 children's hospitals in the United States telling girls that they can be boys at $70,000 a pop in a surgery that has a 67% complication rate. That will kill me from infection that I can't sue on. We're butchering a generation of children because nobody's willing to talk about anything.
Really does take rare courage to put yourself out there and speak so honestly, Matt, because you know they're going to be attacked for telling their story.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's a really interesting contrast between, you know, we talked, of course, to people on both sides of the issue, including so-called experts who are proponents of this stuff. And for them, they were very evasive, didn't want to talk about anything, always acting like they had something to hide, very vague and sort of abstract in their answers. Then we talked to Scott Nugent, and we just heard in the clip there, and she's very open, very kind of raw and honest, willing to talk about anything, kind of laying it all out there. And I do find it to be heroic, especially, you know, to go through the whole process of quote unquote transitioning and then to turn around and warn other people against it. I think that's a really powerful thing. And it's more powerful than, because you and I can sit here and say, you know, here are the problems with these kinds of procedures. But for someone who's actually been through it, and kind of cross that bridge, for them to turn back around and shout to anyone else who might cross it and warn them against it, I think is even more powerful. So that's why I think that, you know, interview in the film was really effective.
As you mentioned, you spoke to doctors who performed these surgeries, irreversible surgeries, on some very young patients. Let's hear from one of those doctors you interviewed.
What's the youngest patient that you've operated on?
The youngest patient I've done vaginoplasty on is age 16.
Do you worry that minors just don't understand enough about themselves? They're not neurologically developed enough yet to make permanent life-altering decisions?
Absolutely not.
Just a very casual, dismissive attitude to a 16-year-old making a decision that is a lifelong decision. There's no coming back from that.
Right, there isn't. And, you know, 16 is obviously very, very young, and it's horrific that we're doing that to 16-year-olds. But then you have to consider that many times kids are being put down this path at even younger ages. I mean, we talked to a quote-unquote gender-affirming pediatrician who puts kids on drugs at, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old. So, At very young ages, whether it's surgery or drugs that sterilize kids, we're being told that the child is, quote, making a decision at such a young age. But then, of course, it doesn't make any sense, because even the people who support giving sex change surgeries to 16-year-olds, if you ask them, well, should a 16-year-old be able to get a tattoo on their face or anywhere else on their body? Should a 16-year-old be able to buy a gun, you know, buy alcohol? Like, any of these kinds of decisions, almost everybody would agree, well, no, that's too young. So if it's too young for that, then how's it not too young to make these life-altering, permanent changes to your body? You know, that's the question they never have an answer to.
And talking about treatments for kids as young as 11 or 12, FINA has handed down its decision to restrict trans athletes from the women's side of the competition. But they did have one exception: if someone had transitioned, if a male athlete had transitioned by the age of 12, then they would be able to compete in the women's competition. Now,
FINA say this isn't to encourage anybody to transition that early, and they in fact say that's not a good idea. But you see this as almost a validation for transitioning children younger and younger.
Yeah, I don't. I know a lot of conservatives are celebrating this move, but I don't actually see it as a win. Now, the win would be if the governing bodies over these various athletic competitions, if they just said, hey, you have to be a woman to compete against women, period. Doesn't matter when you transition, doesn't matter anything else. You have to be a female to compete against women. Now, that would be a win for sanity and for just truth and moral decency. That's not what's happening here. All they're saying is, well, you have to, you know, if a male wants to compete against women, he needs to start his transition younger, which is actually legitimizes childhood transitions. And that's only going to be used by the other side to say, well, see, this is why we got to get the kids on the drugs as early as possible so that they're not left out of opportunities later in life. That's maybe looking at it as glass half empty, but that's also how I think it's going to be used.
Oh, gosh, I hope that's not seen or interpreted that way, but I can understand why you have that fear. Now, back to what is a woman. You spoke to plenty of experts, and some of them were triggered by the strangest things. Even the word truth was seen as triggering and transphobic. Let's have a look.
Well, I'm not even talking about social context. I'm just trying to start by getting to the truth, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really uncomfortable with that language of, like, getting to the truth. Again, in social life...
Why is that uncomfortable?
Because that, it sounds actually deeply transphobic to me. And if you keep probing, we're going to stop the interview.
If I probe about what the truth is?
You keep invoking the word truth, which is condescending and rude. I'm saying to you...
How is the word truth condescending and rude?
Why don't you tell me what your truth is, and you're walking on 30 seconds more of the ice before I get up.
Matt, how did you keep your cool throughout these interviews? Because just watching them is maddening. I mean, how can somebody be so offended by truth, by the word truth, by the pursuit of truth?
Yeah, it was a challenge sometimes. Sometimes a challenge not to laugh in their face. Sometimes a challenge not to scream at the outrageous, ridiculous things I'm being told. But what you just heard there, that really, almost every conversation with these people eventually devolves into some version of that. It you know, you get away from gender, and pretty soon you're getting into, well, what is truth? Is there a truth? Whose reality are we talking about? I mean, I had that kind of interaction so many times, because what you find out is that at base, at bottom, all this gender ideology stuff, it's really a war on truth. It's really... really comes down to relativism.
Yes.
And the belief that that we all get our own truth and our own reality. And I think that's ultimately what they're trying to defend, I think.
Well, it is. It is a denial of truth, a denial of logic, denial of biology sometimes. And these conversations that you had where you did keep your cool, my goodness, some of them are bordering on the absurd. We've got here another expert who's talking about, you know, whether chickens laying eggs have been assigned a gender.
Male gametes. That's what makes me male.
No, your sperm don't make you male.
Then what does?
It's a constellation.
In reality, in truth, okay?
Whose truth are we talking about?
The same truth that says we're sitting in this room right now, you and I.
No, you're not listening.
If I see a chicken laying eggs and I say that's a female chicken laying eggs, did I assign female, or am I just observing a physical reality that's happening in the world?
Does a chicken have gender identity? Does a chicken cry?
Well,
does a chicken commit suicide? Let's frame it, because you're talking, you're trying.
A chicken has sex like any biological organism.
A chicken has an assigned gender, but a chicken doesn't have a gender identity.
So we assign female to chickens when they lay eggs?
We assume they're female if they lay eggs.
Oh, goodness me. Now, Matt, there was a time when this sort of ideology was confined to university campuses, and people thought, oh, well, you know, that's where you debate these sort of radical ideas. But this movement has got enormous disproportionate power in just every facet now. You look at not just public institutions, but private institutions, the number of corporates that virtue signal about this issue. Yeah? Can you just help us understand the power of this activist group, such a small group, but with such disproportionate influence and power.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons we made the movie, really, was for people to understand just how powerful this ideology is, how widespread it is. And that's one thing I've heard from people who've watched it is lots of people have told me, well, I didn't realize how bad it was until I saw the film. And that's not the only thing I want people to take away from the film, but that is one of the things I want them to take away is that this is not just something out on the fringes or, as you say, just in the universities anymore that we can ignore. It is everywhere. And I think what happened is, you know, it seems like it came out of nowhere 5 or 10 years ago. But it really didn't. It made its way into the institutions, especially academia, government, media. It made its way into those institutions over the course of decades. And then from there, I think, filtered down into the general population. And then maybe, you know, 8, 10 years ago is when it kind of had it exploded onto the scene on a mainstream level. And now, you know, you go anywhere and at least you go anywhere in the Western world and people are impacted by these ideas. And many people have bought into them without even realizing that they have.
So there you have it. Watch this space, I would suggest. And again, it's very important to be aware of the forces in this world, often corporate or institutional, that drive the world into new places. Places which don't necessarily advance the wellness and well-being of humanity, but often have more questionable motives, shall we say. So thanks as always to all my supporters. Links are down below. You want to continue supporting me or new people who can support me within their means to keep analyzing the science, analyzing geopolitics, analyzing data, and helping people to understand, you know, how the world really works and see behind the headlines as to what's really going on in the murky underbelly of our corporate-led world. So thank you.